Welcome back to the Office Hours podcast. Great to be with you here. Steve Kellner is with me today, paralegal extraordinaire. This guy's been reviewing veterinary contracts for over 20 years. I always say it because it's still true. I think Steve's seen more veterinary contracts than any person alive or dead at this point.
At this point, I'm just extending my lead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you are just extending your lead as the goat of employment contract review in veterinary medicine. But today's topic, Steve, is a topic that's near and dear to both of our hearts. The topic of production-based compensation in veterinary medicine, which, you know, I'm going to be really frank, Steve, just coming out right from the start, shooting from the hip. I'm a big fan of production-based compensation. As a former associate, as a former practice owner, I owned a number of practices. As somebody that reviews a lot of contracts, I think production is a really fair way to pay veterinarians. And I'm just going to go ahead and say this because, you know, one of the things that we hear from certain individuals is production-based compensation can create unfairness in the workplace, that some veterinarians will charge too much to clients to run tests that aren't necessary, to steal cases from other associates. And I can tell you, Steve, you know, I've been in the field for, you know, I've been in the field of veterinary medicine for 25 years. I mean, doing this job for over 10 years. It is exceedingly rare that we actually find a veterinarian that is doing that. It does happen. I'm not going to say for a second that there's not bad apples, you know, in any bunch. But in my experience, those fears are very rarely true. They're fears, but I don't see them actually coming to actual fruition very commonly. What are your thoughts there, Steve?
Yeah, I think it's mostly unfounded, and it kind of like makes me think of like, yeah, like the bad actor that steals the client list on the way out the door. Yes, it happens, but it's incredibly rare, you know. And I also think about, like, you know, the argument of, oh, Dr. Smith is best friends with the receptionist, so he gets all the good cases. I don't really see that happening a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even hear people really making allegations of that, yeah. You know, both on the practice owner side and the, you know, and the other associate side, like, oh, this person's no, I mean, I can think of in the last, you know, last year, you know, probably talking to, you know, over 1,000 veterinarians in various cases and things like that, that, you know, maybe that allegation has come up once or twice. Yeah, and so, yeah, I get the fear, but I don't think the experience actually plays out. But the other thing to really play into this, Steve, is, you know, production-based compensation at this point is incredibly common. I mean, I would say production-based compensation is in, what do you think, 85% of the contracts we see, maybe more, maybe 90.
I might even go up to 90, maybe even a little more than that. It is pretty much the standard at this point.
Yeah, I would say it's, you know, whether you're talking, well, let's just break it down. I mean, so basically every small animal general practitioner, maybe in the small animal general practitioner route, 95% of them pay with some sort of production compensation component, you know, to the overall compensation package. If you go ER urgent care, 100%. I mean, like I can't even remember the last urgent care ER contract that I've seen that did not have a production compensation component, you know, to the overall package. Equine, I mean, any of your big equine practices have a, or even regional equine practices have a production component in them. You know, probably the area that I see less production compensation is in the mixed animal world. Yeah, you know, so rural practices, you know, there I would say that we're probably in the, you know, 60 to 70% range have a production compensation component in there.
And I think that's where you would almost also get the, oh, this doctor gets the big farms and I'm not getting the big farm here. And that's where I think that disparity.
Well, it can really create, I mean, a mixed animal world, and mixed animals near and dear to my heart, right? You know, that's where I grew up and all of that fun stuff, and still play around. But, you know, it really can create some unfairness if you have, one person that has to go out and do all the farm calls and spends all their time on the road, and then one person that stands in the mixed animal ho or the small animal hospital and just, sees small animal patients and orders blood work all day, two wildly different productions, from those veterinarians. And so that's really, so the well-run mixed animal practices, we're kind of going down a rabbit hole, Steve. The well-run mixed animal practices will actually have a differential percentage based on the thing that that veterinarian is doing, whether it's equine, whether it's bovine, whether it's out of the hospital on ambulatory, whether it's small animal in the hospital, different percentages for different species or locations practiced. And that really starts to create some fairness among, hey, I'm stuck out here doing, large animal work all day long on the road. But back to the, back to like the small animal, the ER, urgent care. Oh, by the way, Steve, I forgot specialty medicine. So when we're working with a surgeon, a dentist, an internist, an oncologist, an ophthalmologist, you name it, right? Everyone that we see is there's some sort of production component in their compensation package. I mean, super common, even in a lot of academic settings as well. I mean, maybe where we see, I mean, we can name some specialties that aren't paid on production, laboratory animal medicine, pathology, some stuff like that. But basically every other specialty, boarded specialty where we're, more or less interacting with clients in a hospital basis, paid on some sort of production component.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is just incredibly common. And we want to see this because we don't want you on a base salary model. Then you're overproducing to such an extent that if you were on a production model, you may be looking at $50,000 more income on an annual basis.
Yeah, that's really where I really like a, a production component in the compensation packages, because it kind of ensures that the veterinarian doesn't under negotiate and doesn't overproduce. And so I think a really common component or a really common thing is, the associate that's paid on base salary is actually overproducing. I mean, they're bringing in more money, than they're being, than their production percentage would have them paid. And so having that production component in there kind of helps neutralize and normalize any failures in the negotiation process, and it ensures that that veterinarian is being paid correctly. Now, let me put my practice owner hat on for just a second, Steve. And I get that those practice owners that are paying on straight production, they're like, well, I get to keep that extra, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000. Like, why would I want to tell them, or why would I want to get them on a production, compensation package? And I'm like, well, you want your people to be paid well. You want your folks to be paid correctly. You don't want corporate to come knocking, and give them an offer that they can't refuse. Like, I think it's a much bigger fear of mine to have my associates poached, if you will, or have them go jump to greener pastures because I'm underpaying them. That would be one of my worst fears. It's going to cost me a lot more money to replace a good associate than it is going to be just to pay them, what they're worth and where they're at. But secondly, for me, Steve, as a practice owner, former practice owner, like, I really want to incentivize people to do the right thing. I mean, I don't want my associates to sit there and think, let's just say hypothetically, Steve, that the big fat chocolate lab, comes in at 4:45 in the afternoon, and its belly's all descended. It's a 9-year-old chocolate lab. They found it laying in the backyard. Its gums are ghost white, pale. You didn't know we're going to talk medicine here, Steve, but like, that's a bleeding abdomen, until proven otherwise, right? We're going to put a probe on it, and we're going to, do an endonocytosis. We're going to find a bunch of blood, but that pet needs surgery now, right? If it's 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon now, and that associate's like, oh, my shift ended 5 minutes ago, you need to go to the ER, tough luck. Well, that okay, now that client has to load that patient back up, take him across town to the ER, sit in the parking lot, sit in the lobby. It may be another couple of hours before that pet gets into surgery, and that's not good for anybody, right? It's not dang sure not good for the pet. It's not good for the client, and it's not good for the revenue of the practice either. So I literally want, I want to put veterinarians in a specific, as a practice owner, I wanted to put veterinarians in a position where they're going to be successful, and say, okay, look, I know that my shift ended at 5 minutes ago, but let me get in here to this, to get this bleeding stopped. Let me get this, this leg bandage. Let me get these, at least get a splint put on this thing. Let's do whatever it is for that last patient of the day. Okay, I'm going to do it because I know I'm going to make, $200, $300, $400. And yeah, it's going to take me a couple hours or an hour of my time, to get in and out, but then I can send them to the ER with bleeding stopped, right? It's going to give my patient a lot better chance. And so from the economic and legal perspective, Steve, what we're doing there is we're aligning everyone's interest, right? It's in the associate's interest to do that surgery. It's in the practice's interest to do that surgery. It's in the client's interest. It's in the patient's interest to do that surgery. Let's just go ahead and do it here. But I mean, I can completely see, an associate saying, "Hey, not my problem. Move on down the road. I don't get paid anything extra to do that." I think that that creates an unfair situation. And yes, I get that most veterinarians are going to do the surgery, but then it goes back to the unfairness. They're doing the surgery, but they're not getting compensated extra for it. So, therein lies the issue.
Yeah,
Interests their interests aren't aligned.
exactly. It's unaligned interests at that point. And as far as like, again, production is incredibly common. We want to make sure that like everything, and we love it. We want to make sure it's done right. And there are different models of production. And a lot of practice owners swap nomenclature from one to the next. And I know it drives me and Lance crazy, but Lance, why don't you tackle like the difference between, base or production hybrid and something like ProSal, because we'll see the terms used interchangeably.
Steve and I both grew up in the 90s and 2000s in veterinary medicine, where production compensation, it wasn't brand new, but it was really becoming more ubiquitous, as Steve and I were talking about. So there were a number of authors and commentators and folks that wrote books and talked and practice managers that talked about how we should be paying on production compensation. But at the end of the day, like, there was really just a couple of different ways to write these. There wasn't a whole lot of creativity in the legal world on how to write production compensation sections or provisions on contracts. And it really kind of came down to, two major ways, what I term as base or production compensation packages. And so the contract, and I get that from the words of the contract, right? The contract will pay you X base. Well, let me back up for a second. The contract, the practice will pay you the greater of X base, or that's a key word, or X percentage of your production, right? So we have base, the word, or production, right? The greater of one of those two. That's the easiest way to draft these, as a lawyer. And so what that implies is we have a base that's a guaranteed base, not going to go lower than that. That's our safety net, our bottom line, if you will. But if the production is greater, then we're going to be on the or side of the equation. We're going to be paid the or amount. To me, that is the easiest. That's the most fair. That is the basically the real common one, honestly, this base or production. But I think what you're getting at, Steve, is most people will mix this up with the word ProSal, right? And so ProSal is a word that was coined by a gentleman named Mark Opperman. Mark is deceased now, but he wrote a book called The Art, I think it was The Art of Veterinary Practice Management. I forget exactly what the name, but he also wrote a book on ProSal as well. Now, ProSal, the word ProSal stuck like wildfire. I mean, we see people use the word ProSal both in oral conversations and in their contracts regularly, right? So they call base or production ProSal. And I often ask myself, why is that? Well, base or production has a lot of syllables, and ProSal has two and six letters. It's easier to say, it's easier to write. And it's kind of taken a life of its own, which is completely different than the ProSal that Mark described, in the books. And so for those of you that are wondering, ProSal, the actual real ProSal, which is characterized by two paychecks per month. That's kind of the key. If we see, hey, practice is going to pay one check as a forward on the month's production, and the second check is the actual previous month's production. If we see that two check per payment, two checks per month payment method, then we know, okay, we're probably dealing with the actual real ProSal. But Steve, when's the last time you saw an actual real ProSal out in the wild in real life?
I think I saw one last year, maybe two, but only one of them was done correctly.
Done correctly. Yeah. So, I mean, the actual, and I would agree with you, Steve, it's been a long time since I've seen one, in real life. It's exceedingly rare to see the actual real life Mark Opperman described ProSal. There's still some practices that use it, but not very many. But that creates a misnomer, right? People are calling it ProSal, but they're really not using ProSal. It's not a huge deal in the grand scheme of things, but legally, Steve and I, we got to make sure that we're on the right page, right? Like, if we're saying ProSal, are we actually using ProSal? If we're saying base production, is it actually described, correctly? It's our job to dot, to dot I's and cross T's, and yeah, and words do matter, in contracts, in a detailed manner. So we'll often, we don't want to be facetious, but we often will correct folks and say, are you truly meaning ProSal, or are you actually talking about baser production? When we get down to the details, oh, it's baser production.
Absolutely. And like one of the things with baser production, sometimes in contracts, it'll flat out say, this is what we expect you to produce given the percentage of production that we're paying you. We would call that a threshold.
The sentence that I gave you earlier, X dollars, X, or X percent, that connotates a production threshold. At a certain point, the veterinarian's going to cross over that threshold. And just to kind of elaborate on that word, Steve, so threshold is, it comes from the door, right? So you walk through a threshold, through a door. On one side of the door is, hey, I'm not producing enough. I'm lower than my threshold. I'm being paid my base. And then as you cross through that door of production, you cross the threshold of production, now you're getting paid via your production. And so that threshold, that concept of the threshold, is super important. But like Steve said, sometimes it's actually spelled out in the contract. Other times it's implied in the contract. So one of the first things that we have to do is actually get a calculator out and calculate what is the production threshold. At what point will the veterinarian, on a monthly or quarterly or an annual basis, Steve's going to talk about that in just a second, at what point will the veterinarian now get that extra paycheck to compensate them for the production? And obviously, for veterinarians, for associates that aren't in that practice currently, they need to understand, okay, am I going to cross my production threshold? Does it matter at all? Like, do I have a chance? Do I have a snowball chance in hell of making production? And if I am, well, then, man, I need to negotiate my production percentage and the details of the production percentage. If I don't have a chance at all to make production based on my salary, based on the percentage, and based on the clients coming in the practice, then I need to negotiate other things: signing bonuses, base salary, benefits, whatever the situation is. And so, knowing that production and knowing what the likelihood of meeting that production threshold, knowing that production threshold and knowing the likelihood of meeting that production threshold or crossing that production threshold is very important to know where to drive the rest of the negotiation. And we'll assume that most veterinarians are going to cross that production threshold. Maybe it's a startup practice, maybe it's a new graduate. That it may take them a while to cross that production threshold. But honestly, that production threshold should be set in a way where it is achievable, it is obtainable. It's a very demoralizing thing for an associate to have this carrot hanging out in front of them, but knowing that they have no chance of ever getting there. So if we're setting a production threshold that's so far extreme and out of reach, then what's the purpose of having it in there anyway? It actually just creates a demoralizing effect, not an incentivization.
Yeah, and like when you do see, and again, it's not incredibly common to see a number, your production threshold is X, but when you do, you want to make sure it's right. Like for example, if I've got 140,000 base salary and it says, and I'm paid on 20%, and it says my production threshold is $750,000, right away I'm identifying a problem.
Yeah.
Because I should only have to make 700,000 700,000 times 20% is 140,000. Why is this threshold artificially been inflated? Lance, why would a practice owner artificially inflate their threshold?
Well, I'll be honest with you. See, I've caught two of these in the last 2 months, where the published threshold in the contract was actually different than what the math says. And so it's kind of like, where does this extra $50,000 go? Like, what's up with that? And so, sometimes I think, well, maybe it's just an error. Maybe it's just, I'm always the guy that assumes positive intent. Maybe they just did not do the math right. Maybe they left a typo in a previous from a previous contract. So I'm going to assume positive intent, but on the foul side, it's like, wait a minute, like you're screwing up, like you're basically screwing that veterinarian out of $10,000 in Steve's example, right? So like that window of $50,000 in there, 10,000 of it would have gone to the veterinarian should the production threshold been calculated correctly. And so, I hate to assume or to come to a situation where it's malintent, but if we try to correct it and it gets corrected back, then we got a problem, right? That's there's a problem in there.
Lance has the positive intent. I tend to tell the people I talk to that I'm worst case scenario person. So let's go with the worst case scenario and hope for the best and see if we can find out why is this a math error or are we talking about something else? And if we're talking about something else, why are we talking about something else?
Absolutely. Well, let's go back to the math just for a second, Steve. So a kind of a common misnomer or misconception that we see with veterinarians is they just take their salary and multiply it by five, and they're like, oh yeah, that's my production threshold. It's like, well, that only works if your production percentage is 20%. If your production percentage is 18 or 22% or 22.5, that math doesn't work. And so we have to take the base salary and divide it by the production percentage. And so, back to Steve's example, let's say that production percentage was 22%. It would actually enter into our calculator 140,000 divided by 0.22. That gives us our right answer. Now, people are like, why do you go to that detail? Well, that's a NAVLE question. Like it's a pretty common thing, and we still see veterinarians, kind of miss that calculation, quite a bit. And then we take that. That's a total overall annual production threshold. But Steve, most of these are calculated on a monthly, and to a lesser extent, some of them are calculated on a quarterly basis. And so then if our production calculation, our production payment is to be made monthly, we take our annual production threshold and divide it by 12. Now we have our monthly production threshold. That's what the veterinarian has to meet on a month-to-month basis.
And then once we do, if they're being paid on a monthly basis, once we have that monthly number, then we can start to look at things like how many appointments do you think you can see a day? How many hours do you work a day? If you don't know or you can't find out, let's try to guess what the average client transaction is. Let's think about the practice's location, their clientele, their fees. Then we can start to do a math problem that says, how likely is it that I'm going to hit or exceed this number?
Absolutely. So I mean, when a veterinarian is doing an internship, I'm sorry, doing an externship, or doing a working interview, or even just an interview with the practice, and there's a production component on their compensation, I think it's a really fair series of questions to ask. What is your average client charge, at this practice? What do your associates generally produce on an average basis or a daily basis? How many patients do you expect that I'm going to see per day? How many surgeries do you expect that I'm going to see per day? And so the veterinarian can get the interviewee, can get to, hey, what's some reasonable math? What can I expect to produce? Because this is your compensation, right? Like, if I'm going to be paid on production, I kind of need to take a guess on what I can totally expect. And that's like if you want to do the math, like, even a more kind of direct line of questioning would be what do most of your associates produce? What did the associate produce that left the position that I'm taking their job? I can tell you, Steve, I typically work with mostly specialists. That is a very fair question for surgeons, for internists, for medical oncologists, for dentists to ask, like, okay, I'm taking this other surgeon's position. What was their production? You know, how much production is laying there on the table for me to go produce? Because that helps me make a decision if I'm going to take this job or not.
I definitely want to go that route for specialists for ER because it's not a factor of I know I'm going to see this many cases per day on half hour appointments. You know, much more important to, you know, do some due diligence there. But now I know we mentioned 20%, I know we mentioned 22%. You know, what are we kind of, let's talk about what we're seeing as far as percentages for the different types of practice because it does vary quite a bit.
Steve, this is another place where we have to stop talking about, how old we are here. But, if we go back 10 or 15, 20 years, there was basically just one percentage here. It was 20%, and that's what the practices paid across the board. Now we're starting to see a lot of detail and some wide variation, in these percentages. And some of it's good and some of it's bad. But I would say in my brain, in my realm of normal, on the small animal side, we're probably going to be, small animal general practice side, we're probably going to be somewhere between 18 and 22%. I think the highest that I've seen in the last, 4 or 5 months is a 23.5%, which kind of surprised me, and it stuck in my brain, a little bit. If we go and we'll talk about the details in this and what's included and what's excluded in just a second. That's why we see that range overall. In ER, we typically see a little bit higher than that, 22, 23%. Maybe a 24%, every now and then, depending on the practice and the location. And urgent care kind of fits into that ER category in my brain as well, Steve. Specialist, we see wide variation here. Totally depends on the specialty, and the way that I kind of think of it is the more overhead that's around the specialist, the lower the percentage is. And so, like, take surgeons, for example. You've got to have a surgery suite. You've got to have all your plates. You may have, arthroscopes. You have five or six technicians. You've got a full suite of kennel banks out front. You've got receptionists out front. Like, surgery is a very capital intensive, and labor intensive, business model. So the production percentage goes down. And that's opposed to, say, an ophthalmologist or a dentist, where it's like, hey, I just need a couple of wet tables. A couple of high speeds and maybe one technician and a receptionist out front, an assistant. Like, that's a much lighter and leaner business model, and the production percentage for that dentist or that ophthalmologist may go up a little bit depending on the phaco machine, Steve. Those are pretty expensive too. But so it depends on the overhead that's around the associate. And then if we get over into the mixed animal or equine world, in this sense, it totally depends on how much ambulatory is done by the practice. And so the more ambulatory the practice is, the higher that production percentage can be. One, because the veterinarian is going to see less cases per day. But two, there's less overhead, and we don't have the full bricks and mortar and all of that stuff. But the more that a equine or a mixed animal practitioner looks like a small animal practitioner in terms of bricks and mortar and surgery suites and stalls and, front desk and things like that, the more bricks and mortar overhead they have around them, the lower that production percentage is. And so the bottom line here is these vary widely, and to a certain extent, they are negotiable, Steve. I mean, that's one of those things. If we determine, hey, this veterinarian's going to cross their production threshold, then it behooves the veterinarian to negotiate that production percentage.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of this is where I'm a little bit of an idealist. Like I want to see GP, I want to see 22%. I really want to see if I see anything under 22%, that is the first thing that I'm going to suggest that we ask to be increased is the production percentage up for a GP associate. As far as and yes, and I've also seen I remember the 23.5, I've seen a couple 23s. I'm pretty comfortable saying that 22% is the trending norm, 20% is the old norm. Not that I would turn down a 20 or a 21%, but I'm definitely going to ask if there's any room for an increase.
And those 18s and those 20%, the devil's really in the details, Steve. And so that's when we really have to dig in and understand what's included, what's excluded, and specifically what we're talking about there are products and services, and
Yes,
so
it's split.
exactly. And so if a, if we have a 20% and everything's included, all of your heartworm prevention and all of your flea tick prevention and all of that stuff is lumped into that 20%. Hey, that may be a pretty fair situation, but you may get to a 22%. Well, we're excluding heartworm, we're excluding flea and tick. I saw one the other day, Steve, that was excluding heartworm test. It's like,
Really?
whoa, man, that's kind of crazy. If it starts to exclude things like, product refills, sometimes I'll see them exclude, entire classes of medications, NSAIDs, things like that. It's like, well, wait a minute, that's what I do every single day. And if I'm not getting paid on prescribing NSAIDs or prescribing antibiotics, well, that's a problem, right? So 22 all of a sudden doesn't look so good anymore.
Right.
We're starting to take this stuff out. And so when I say the devil's in the details, and this is really negotiable, this is where we spend a lot of time, like really carving out and thinking about, like, okay, why are refills not included? And can we get them included? And it sometimes gets down to really detailed language where it's like, if the refill is in conjunction with the physical exam. All right. Well, as a clinician, I'm sitting there thinking, like, I don't always do a physical exam to do a refill. And I mean, kind of my classic example is, let's take a heart dog or a heart cat. So somebody that's in congestive heart failure and they're on a whole slew of medications, Lasix and enalapril and, vetmedin and all these other things. And every time the patient goes to refill their medications, the client calls on the phone or they come to the front desk and they're like, hey, she's peeing on the bed now. Okay, well, I know we probably need to decrease the Lasix dose, or she's really kind of slowing down. All right, let's start increasing our other doses there. So if I've got to use my brain to think about what this next dosage is going to be, I really should get paid for that, right? And under a lot of these models, that consultation that's not a physical exam, it's just a conversation with the client, is not compensated. Well, that's a problem. And so to my retort to the practice, Steve, and this really can only come from, being a practicing veterinarian, is saying, look, you want to incentivize me to practice best medicine, and you want me to refill these patients' medications so they're not going to Chewy.com and all this other stuff. And you want me to have a conversation with that client to discuss how that patient's doing at home. You got to incentivize the veterinarian to do that, right? Like, you don't want them to blow that client off and move on to something else. And so incentivizing best medicine is really incentivizing everything, refills and all that stuff as well. So sometimes we'll get down in the words and we'll change the word without exam to without consultation by the veterinarian. And so, yeah, you may think, wow, that's a really nuanced thing. But if you prescribe, and I'll ask the veterinarian, like, how many complex and chronic cases do you guys have? Oh, we have a lot. Okay, well, this may be $100,000 or $200,000 in production right there. Now we're talking about $20,000 a year, just on one word, exam versus consultation. And so that's a big deal for me, as a former practicing veterinarian.
That's exactly what I want to see in conjunction with an exam or consultation. You don't want to be, to Lance's point, in a situation where, I mean, I had an associate maybe 6 months ago tell me a story about a colleague who didn't get any production for refills. So guess what? He never prescribed a refill. He would have the so the client would have to make another appointment, come back in, get another script. And that's just not where we want to be.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not best medicine. It's not good for anybody involved. Yeah, so it really goes back to, is the practice incentivizing the correct behavior? And that's an example of, maybe a veterinarian taking it, too far. But a much easier thing would have just been, hey, why don't we just get the thing in the contract from the first place? Now, I can totally get, Steve, as a former practice owner, needing to exclude things like heartworm and flea and tick prevention, because there's no way that we're going to compete with the big box stores on flea and tick prevention and heartworm prevention in terms of price, right? And so it's like, if we need to get those excluded out, I kind of understand that. I mean, the markup may be 5 or 10%. What we see in other contracts is, We see those preventative items paid production at like 10%. All right, so it's a lower, so there's something there, but it's just a lower percent to kind of match, what the markup for the practice, would be delivering. For me, this really starts to change geographically, right? So if we've got a practice that's somewhere down on the Gulf Coast, in Texas, in the southern United States, and it's a really heartworm and flea tick endemic area, and heartworm, flea, and tick is a huge deal for those practices down there. Okay, then I want to see, I can see more stuff carved out, but I want to see some incentivization for that veterinarian to dispense that flea tick, heartworm, and prevention. If we're in, Wyoming or Montana, or I practiced in Colorado for a long time, and let's be honest, like, yeah, we had some heartworm, but it wasn't near like living in Florida or Mississippi. It's not as big a deal for those practices up there. It's not it's not the same percentage of money, percentage of revenue based on that heartworm, flea, and tick stuff.
Exactly. Now we have an option here. Do we want to talk about the elephant in the room of negative accrual, or should we talk about frequency of payments and talk about negative accrual another time? What do you think
Hey,
on
let's go down that negative accrual rabbit hole, Steve. Because you and I are aligned here. We're really starting to see negative accrual kind of go away. And we're not going to take credit for this,
that?
but you see me smiling here. We have railed on negative accrual for so
Yeah.
long, and we fought and pushed back against practices, and we saw a lot of clients just literally not sign contracts because there was negative accrual in the contract, and the practice refused to take it out. And so I think that corporate practices have kind of gotten the message that they are going to have a really hard time hiring associates if they insist on negative accrual in the contract, which I think is a good thing overall. Like, associates pushed back on it, associates hated it, and hiring suffered because of it. And so we actually saw what I'm thinking is a market correction where negative accrual is really coming out of a lot of those contracts at that point. And if it's still in there, we find that the associate can get it taken out pretty easily just by asking, like, "Hey, I'm not comfortable with signing something with negative accrual." And they're like, "Oh, we're so sorry. We'll take it out." But Steve, you've seen a few, here lately that are on the private practice side, the independently owned practice side, which I still see some of them as well. But go ahead.
Yeah, and that's the big thing is, like, I'm always gonna lead with let's just remove it. Let's remove it, let's take it out, let's explain why it's disincentivizing, let's explain. And for me, the biggest reason to me it's disincentivizing is it penalizes you for taking time off. I'm gonna go take a vacation, I'm gonna get paid for 4 weeks, I'm only gonna do services for 3 weeks. That could throw me negative. Because I went to go and protect my work-life balance, recharge my battery, so I could come back to practice refreshed, re-energized, not so I could come back to practice with a production deficit. And I think that's where the bigger companies have really gotten the drift. It's too much work for them to calculate how to make it fair. Let's just get rid of it. Now, if a practice, private practice or otherwise, won't get rid of it, there's some guardrails we can put into place. What kind of guardrails do you think we should get in there, Lance?
So I think of a 1-2-3 punch against negative accrual. So, number one, let's just take it out, completely. Number two, if they ins absolutely insist, "Hey, we have to have it in there, blah, blah, blah," then we go in and put a set of reset provisions in. So the negative balance will be reset once every 6 months, once a year, right? So if that veterinarian does find themselves in a big negative balance situation where it's like, "Hey, there's no way I can dig out of this and ultimately make production," it resets to zero. And that could happen for a number of reasons, right? It could happen because the veterinarian was out sick, because they went on vacation, because there was an economic downturn, because the practice was closed, because there was a flood. I mean, like, there's a thousand things that could go wrong that can cause that negative balance. And so let's reset it, on an every 6 months basis, or an annual basis at the very, very, very least. And that's usually accepted, Steve. I mean, that's, and I want to be honest here. We're talking about a small percentage of the overall contracts that we see at this point. I would say negative accrual is in, I mean, help me out here, 10, 15% at most.
10%.
10%. I think we're on the same page there. And typically it's in independently owned practices at this point. And so we're, some of these will actually die on this hill. Like we have to have negative accrual in the contract. Okay, so what are some ways that we can water this thing down a little bit? And then the third kind of the 1, 2, 3 punches, Steve, is, and you mentioned it earlier, that it really impacts veterinarians when they're taking their PTO. All right, so let's not have negative accrual count when we're on PTO. All right, so if you're in the hospital, if the associate's in the hospital and they're sitting on a stool in the back, playing on social media or playing Tetris and not seeing rooms, I kind of get that, right? If you're in the hospital and not producing, I can make a case that that's a problem, right? But if you're at home or on the beach not producing, that's a whole nother beast, right? Like if negative accrual is accounting against you while you're on PTO or are taking CE leave, that's a problem, right? So, okay, on PTO days, negative accrual will not count. And so we will insert that into the contract. And ultimately, that gets in a point where it should water down negative accrual, where it really doesn't impact the veterinarian, the way that the traditional kind of unbiased negative accrual affects veterinarians.
And before we close it up for today, I've got a fourth punch, delayed start. Cruel.
Very
So
good.
big time for the new grad. You're a new grad. You just got into practice. You don't know the practice. I mean, you should be focusing on good medicine, bonding with clients, learning the staff, how everything operates, not worried about, am I going to hit my numbers? We're not seeing new grads on production for anywhere, 3 to 6 month range. So if you have to have negative accrual, if there's no way to get rid of it, let's delay that start to 1 year. And I've even seen people get it delayed out to 2 years. Delayed start, reset to zero annually or at 6 months. If it absolutely has to stay in, we want to build enough guardrails so it's not incredibly punitive to the veterinarian.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But Steve, you mentioned that we're almost done. I could talk about production for hours.
I know. I think we might have to have a part two on this one.
Oh, gotcha, gotcha. Well, before we close, I do want to tell kind of one story here, more or less, and that is, make sure that the practice is correctly calculating the production. This is a big deal for me, and I tend to deal with most of the more of the problems, right? In a veterinarian emails or calls and says, "Hey, I think the production is not being calculated correctly." We get the production reports and it hasn't been calculated correctly for like 3 years, right? And so we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars, that were not paid. And so my advice to all associates is to check that production, check that the production provider is correct in the computer system on every single case. So when they go to run that production report, the things that you do are actually getting credited to you. Remember that most of those computer systems default to the old guy, right? The owner of the practice or the former owner of the practice, not to the associates that's there today. So the receptionist CSR has to actively change, the name in the system. So we want to make sure that that name is under you. And then secondly, make sure that you're checking that on a daily basis. You can't come back 2 years, 6 months, whatever later and say, "Hey, we need to rerun all these reports." It's way too late. You can't remember the cases that you saw, 3 months ago, 2 months ago, whatever else. And so it's really checking it on a daily basis. Steve, when I run the audits on these computer systems, I'll see incorrect production reports $50,000 and $60,000 off
Really?
regularly. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, somebody's not getting credited for this production, and that's a $10,000 swing in their compensation, right? That they're not getting paid 20% roughly of that
Roughly.
amount. Oh, that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's not fun. Not fun. So yeah, I mean, make sure you have access to your reports. Look at them. If you have to go up to the front desk and say, hey, at the end of the day, hey, you coded this one to the wrong person. That was me. Once you do that for like a few days, a week, the receptionist is either going to get it or they're going to get tired of you coming up front and get it for that reason.
Good point. You got to have that CSR change in the computer system. If the associate's going back and changing those production percentages. Yeah, I'm also the guy that has to run the audit reports, on these computer systems. And it's like, Dr. Smith, why is there $100,000 of production that you changed out of other doctor's name into your name? That starts to look pretty fishy. You want somebody else's login to change those reports, not you. See, we covered a lot of ground on production relatively quickly. Obviously, very important stuff, big component to the compensation of veterinarians, big component of the overall contract. But it also kind of falls in line with our theme here, Steve. Everything's negotiable, right? These little details on, refills and negative accrual and starting provisions and production percentages and thresholds, all this stuff is super negotiable. You just have to know the details of that contract and how it's going to affect you and basically your future self downstream. Why does this have a big impact on veterinary on the veterinarian in the future?
Yep, it's all about identifying it and asking for it because
Exactly.
everything is negotiable and everything you don't ask for is a no already.
That's precisely right. Yeah, I know you. I know you repeat that a lot, and it incentivizes just to people to go ahead and ask. Never hurts to ask.
Ask.
All right, Steve. Until next time, we will come back and talk to you about some other fun and exciting veterinary contract stuff on office hours. Thanks for being here, Steve.
See y'all later.